Hello, here is your KVNF regional newscast for Tuesday, May 21st. Water leaders from seven western states met at Hoover Dam yesterday to sign a plan in response to ongoing drought and less water from the Colorado River. From KNPR in Las Vegas, Rachel Christensen has more.
The drought contingency plan has been almost 6 years in the making. It spells out cuts to the river's biggest users should Lake Mead continue to drop. Brenda Berman is the commissioner of the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation. She says the plan will go into effect immediately.
Right of way, what that will mean first is the states are going to have more flexibility about how they can save water in Lake Mead. But second, in August, we make our determination for next year of whether there'll be a shortage or not. Right now, we project that the lake will be below 1090 elevation.
The plan is facing a lawsuit from California's Imperial Irrigation District, the single largest user on the river. Pending that case, the plan to keep more water in the river's biggest reservoirs, Lake Mead and Lake Powell, will go forward. I'm Rachel Christensen.
And in an ongoing story we've been covering here on the regional newscast, even though the boating season is just getting started, Colorado Parks and Wildlife boat inspectors have already found 8 boats infested with mussels. Most recently, Parks and Wildlife has found mussels on 3 boats at Navajo State Park during the last month. According to a press release, 2 of the boats had been purchased recently by Colorado residents in Arizona and had been on mussel-infested lakes. The owners said the boats had been decontaminated in Arizona, but Parks and Wildlife inspectors still found mussels in cracks, crevices, and in the engines of the boats. One was a pontoon boat, and the other 2 were houseboats. Parks and Wildlife reminds owners, especially those bringing in boats from outside the state, to make sure their boats are decontaminated before bringing them into Colorado. Boat owners who bring in boats from areas known to be contaminated and fail to alert Parks and Wildlife can face fines of up to $1,000. Waters in southwest Colorado are especially vulnerable because of the proximity to Lake Powell, which has been heavily infested for years. In 2018, 51 boats with adult mussels were found at inspection stations, far more than the previous record of 26 boats in a single year. Colorado is one of the most recent states to enact a so-called red flag law. While the laws vary from state to state, there really aren't any major differences. Matt Vazlagombros is a reporter from Stateline, a news service funded by the Pew Charitable Trusts. He's reported on similar laws in places across the country. For the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Exchange, KRCC's Abigail Beckman spoke with him.
So opponents of this law say taking someone's firearms away because they may be a threat to themselves or others is a violation of due process and Second Amendment rights. Is that similar to what has been said or argued elsewhere?
Yeah, right now it's up to about 200 counties across 9 states that are denouncing any sort of gun legislation, saying that they're not going to enforce it.
Can a sheriff or a county really choose not to enforce something that is now the law?
Right. So this gets into kind of a legally tricky scenario where, you know, if you jaywalk, a cop has a choice to give you a ticket or not. If you got pulled over for speeding, you could get a warning or you can get a ticket. They have the discretion to do what they'd like since they are the law enforcement officer. So in this case, they say, well, our citizens in mostly rural areas are responsible gun owners, and it's a burdensome law for our community, so we have the discretion not to enforce it because we're not dealing with the same issues in, say, Denver than they are in rural areas of the state.
But are there any consequences for that?
So a lot of this has been bluster. There hasn't been a specific case in which a sheriff has refused to carry out one of these red flag orders from a judge. But certain officials in other states have made it clear that if you do not enforce this law and something happens where someone gets injured because a law was not enforced, that sheriff will be held legally responsible. The Washington State Attorney General recently came out with a statement that said as much. Now, other legal experts that I spoke to said that to hold a sheriff liable is a fantasy, that, again, it goes back to this discretion issue. So if it comes to a point where there's some sort of legal case, I think then maybe the courts will decide whether or not they have the right to do that. But as of right now, you have sheriffs and county officials across the country saying that they're not going to enforce some of these laws.
So following along that kind of same vein, this word sanctuary, the use of that has been kind of interesting. Some counties here have chosen specifically not to include that word, but others have been intentional on including it. What significance does that term have?
Really, the term picked up in Illinois, where officials downstate were frustrated with these new gun laws that they said were written because of the problems in Chicago. And Illinois is a very big state, and problems in rural areas are not the same in urban areas. And so basically this one county said, you know, we want to spice up our legislation. And since the sanctuary term is a big buzzword and Chicago is a sanctuary city for immigrants, we're going to co-opt that. And we're going to say we are a sanctuary for gun rights. So it's more of a thumb in the eye to say that while you may be protecting the rights of immigrants, we're protecting the rights of gun owners in our communities.
We know all too well here in Colorado that we are not immune to gun violence, even in recent weeks with the shooting at a school in Highlands Ranch. The Columbine Massacre here just marked its 20th anniversary, and the Aurora Theater shooting took place here in 2012. This kind of legislation really gained traction, though, following the Parkland shooting in Florida. What have the arguments been in favor?
Well, you know, some lawmakers and law enforcement officers clearly say that this saves lives. I talked to a sheriff out here on the East Coast in Montgomery County, Maryland, who told me that since Maryland passed their red flag law, in the first 4 months, they had nearly 400 petitions to remove weapons from people. And he said five of those involved a potential school shooting. So, you know, he was very intent on saying that in his community, he believes these laws have been life-saving. And this kind of legislation, like you said earlier, couldn't have been passed if it weren't for those student activists in Parkland. You know, if you look at school shootings, like you said, since Columbine or even the Sandy Hook shooting at the elementary school, there was a lot of call for action, but there wasn't a lot of action at the state level. And a good argument could be made that if it weren't for those student activists, that the momentum that we see now in states red and blue wouldn't have come to fruition. And I mean, to that point, many of the new red flag laws were signed by Republican governors. So it's not necessarily just a Democratic issue. There is some bipartisan support for some of these measures.
And that was your KVNF regional newscast for Tuesday, May 21st. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould. Thanks so much for listening.